Tom, this picture we're looking at, and Richard, you jump in as well, and then we've got the phones ringing off the hook here. These pictures of these so-called trees, explain, Thomas, what this is.
Well, it's a region of Mars that might be special in terms of, like, hot springs are special on Earth, where there are objects that look very much like trees. They're maybe a couple hundred meters across, which makes sense for a lower gravity field. They have a branch-like structure. The photographs look very much like trees from above, and we've taken them at different seasons, and they do change with the seasons, and they cast shadows on the ground. And the original explanation of some kind of a crystalline structure just didn't hold up at all. If these were taken on Earth, we wouldn't have any doubt that they were trees. They look very much that way. But since it's on Mars, there's a lot of doubt, and we won't know for sure till we get a spacecraft landed in that area to go over and check it out.
What's even more startling to me is not the heavy shrubbery of the trees. It's the small trees on the right-hand side of this picture. Those are remarkable because they're sticking right out of the ground.
Yes, that's right. The whole scene is remarkable. It's one of Arthur C. Clarke's favorite pictures. And after he saw that particular image, there are many like it, but that particular one, he said he's now 95% convinced that there's large-scale biology on Mars.
So, Richard, why can't we get MRO, maybe we can, to take pictures of this?
We can. MRO is in a polar orbit. They have asked for the public to give them a list of targets. You and I are going to coordinate that campaign. We're going to make sure the NASA Administrator, Mike Griffin, one way or the other, knows about this. All the people in the MRO project, we will get close-up pictures showing detail on the order of inches from this spacecraft, from this 180-mile-high orbit. And all we have to do is to do what our jobs are, which is to keep this in front of the American people and this very special audience. Let me say one other thing. If Tom and I are right, if Mars underwent this incredible catastrophe and it had oceans and it suffered the enormous blows of a planet exploding in its front yard, et cetera, and you had tsunamis and you had atmosphere loss and you had, you know, a planetary cataclysm of a scale that is unimaginable except in the Bible, you'd expect that the surviving life, if this planet had life before, would have migrated or stuck around, persisted in the most habitable places left on the planet, which is the polar regions. That's where the water would have gone. It's called cold trapping. When the atmospheric flows cause it to go to the poles and then freezes out, we now know from the European mission, the Mars Express mission, that under the thin layer of CO2, frozen carbon dioxide, at the South Pole as well as the North Pole, there are enormous reservoirs of water. If you had a persistent life, and particularly if you had a life form that was different in a Martian way before the catastrophe, more inclined to live in extreme environments, like we have extremophiles in terms of microbes here, then you would logically find life in the one place where there's copious water still, even though it's in a frozen form, because deep down, Tom was right, there could be springs, there could be hot pockets, there could be, you know, liquid, and then it would extend, you know, roots down. It would get sunlight for a year because the poles of Mars are tilted by the same angle roughly as the Earth. So with a Martian orbit twice as long as Earth, the Martian summers in the southern hemisphere are a year long, an Earth year long. And then you'd have a year of darkness, but the plant might be acclimated with some kind of tough membrane and, you know, able to keep vapors inside and protect itself against the very thin atmosphere. In other words, you're looking at all the possibilities for an indigenous Martian life form, part of an ecosystem that would get NASA an absolute gold card. If scientists just plausibly, just conservatively laid out the numbers and the statistics I just did and said we need to know more. Instead, you have the geologists who run JPL saying adamantly, oh, it's just geysers of CO2 and sprays of black dust and slick carbon dioxide, you know, that's that's transparent. In other words, they are completely eschewing the biological possibilities that are within absolute mainstream scientific discipline right now, and it is the most stupid political thing unless we are not supposed to think about life on Mars at any level of NASA or JPL or any other agency at all costs, because if we open the door, George, to life, then we open the door to all the other things that Brookings said could do us in.
Well, I know, but you know, Richard, if I were a NASA official, I'd be jumping all over this picture. I'd be saying, we're going to take pictures of this. We're going to land out here. We're going to send rovers there. I mean,
well, remember, they had a mission called Mars Polar Lander, which was aimed for exactly this terrain. And what happened to it, George?
Well, wasn't that the one where they had the mistake, or is that the one that crashed?
That's the one they claim because of a mistake it crashed.
Yeah.
It's another disappeared mission.
They were using meters or something.
No. That was the Mars orbiter, which was going to orbit. This was going to land in the South Pole, right around these trees, these bushes, and it disappeared. And the question is,
you don't think it disappeared, do you?
Well, of course not. See, I know Tom has to remain politically correct because he's got a lot of friends in the agency. I don't. The ones that I...
Well, you never will with this attitude.
Well, the ones that I do know who I am, and they stick by me because they know that I tell the truth as I see it. And I think we have been suckered from day one because there's an agenda. It's driven by Brookings in part. It's driven by the idea that this stuff we can't know because, you know, it would be cats and dogs living together and all that other nonsense. In other words, this is part of a much bigger picture to keep us down on the farm, because if we realize we're not alone in the universe, that we had a much more interesting history, that there's other folks out there, then politically and religiously and every other ism, we will do different things that people in the position of power do not want us to do or think or stray from the straight and narrow of life as it is practiced here and now. Uh-huh. And that, I think, is what's been driving the train. And the only thing that's going to change it, George, is you and me and a few million of our friends listening to us right now, tonight.
Well, I got to tell you, Cydonia is exciting because of the possibilities. It was made by beans. This is exciting because, I mean, this is obviously vegetation. I mean,
well, it's obviously something that's not geology, and that's what makes their geological explanation so silly. Tom, would you agree?
Yes, I do agree. They've come up with geological mock explanations for several things, such as the glassy tubes. And in each case, they're easily defeated. I mean, a school child could defeat some of the theories.